VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, and what a Saturday morning it is. I don't remember walking outside for quite some time being any more comfortable than this morning.
Apparently it's going to bring some showers later, though.
And which will bring in May?
Mm-hmm.
Flowers. All right, it's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color. And we will stay for the hour, and we will talk about all kinds of fun and game things that we like to talk about, unless you would prefer to get yourselves involved, in which all you would have to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. And as always, callers go directly to the head of the line, and we will discuss what it is you would prefer to discuss, whether it's about a personal opinion, whether it's about a fact, whether it's an investing question, anything in personal finance, or just a comment on the passing scene. Whatever, we are here and available, and it's always more fun for people to hear. I was telling somebody this week that only 5% of people who listen to radio shows like this will ever call. Most people are too timid to call, which also reminds me that if you have questions and you don't want to subject yourself to being on the air, simply send us an email, info@VanWee Financial, which is on our website, VanWeeFinancial.com, which also has a bunch of other wonderful things on it. So don't hesitate to go there. For all the regulars, thanks for coming back. It's because you're always here that we are always here, and we'll keep doing that. And if you're new to the show, either by accident or on purpose, try to stick around for the hour. You might just pick up some pointers that'll help. There certainly is a lot to talk about, and there's a lot of things that are being talked about in ways that I could not possibly disagree with any more than I do. So we'll try to straighten out some of those things along the way, and you can chime in if you would like to and tell us if we're wrong or right. We are right.
Of course. I mean,
you know, when I long ago defined right as being that which agrees with me.
Yeah, and I would just alter that slightly and put myself in there.
Exactly. Step in front. All right. Well, another tumultuous week on the street.
Yeah.
Some money was lost here and there. Some money was made here and there. But it goes right back to the old political scene and people's fears. And quite frankly, it's a tempest in a teapot at this point in time. The market does this funny thing that people refer to as pricing in. So the collective market, which, believe me, is very smart most of the time.
Yeah.
In the long run, it's really smart.
Short term, not as much.
No. Short term, it's volatile and incoherent sometimes. They worry too much. But they price in things that might possibly happen, although they may not know very much about it. And that's what's happened this week. And as soon as Adam finishes the market wrap, I am going to read to you a letter we sent to all of our clients and friends Wednesday morning. Now, if you remember Wednesday morning, the market opened poorly, to say the least.
Way down.
About 600 points down. Adam and I both agreed it was time to diffuse some potential panic out there, so we drafted a letter and sent it out immediately to people so they'd get it before anything major happened. And looking back on it, it's almost humorous how fortunate the timing was, I guess. You might have thought we sent it on Thursday instead of Wednesday. But then again, we got it handed back to us on Friday. So
yeah,
market giveth, the market taketh away. So carry on.
Yeah, it was a bit of a rough week. And it really wasn't even that bad in terms of pure percentage drop. But it just felt crazy because there was so much volatility. Every day was you were seeing big swings, and they were happening in seconds. So it was a really wild week of trading. The NASDAQ is now the only index that's in the black for the year, up a paltry 0.2%.
But that's up, though.
It is, but it also had the roughest week, dropping 2.1%, while the S&P was down 1.4% and the Dow down just 0.7%. The declines really aren't staggering, but it really feels bad right now. It's just we're so I guess we got accustomed to last year where there was no volatility. Every day was up. It was a really nice year last year, and this is we're seeing a whole different year in 2018. So
much more normal.
Yeah, it is more normal.
It's an exaggerated version of normal, like last year was right. An exaggerated version of abnormal.
Yeah, but I'd be happy to go back to last year.
Take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, definitely. The tension is really being, or the volatility, I guess, is really being caused by the Trump administration's stance on international trade. And this was a platform that the president ran on. He feels that we are getting bad deals in all of these trade agreements, and we're coming out on the losing end. And in particular, he is singling out China. And what that's all about, in my opinion, is intellectual property rights. Mm-hmm. China has a long history of stealing our patented ideas, and then their manufacturers go and create them at a much lower cost and sell them back to us for a lot cheaper than what we can produce for. So,
estimated annual cost to Americans runs between $265 and $600 billion a year in theft.
Right. And that's what it is. And the government won't do anything about it. And this really is the number one issue right now for the administration. And so in typical Trump fashion, he is very takes a hard stance on it, and he does things in a very unconventional way. And in this case, what he's done is threatened to put these tariffs on Chinese goods imported to the U.S. Well, China, seeing that, doesn't really like it, so they threaten to do the same thing back to us.
They have to save face. Very important there.
In their culture, that is the number one thing. And that's not unlike how Donald Trump operates. He is probably more along those lines than any other president we've had. So let's be clear, no tariffs have actually been put in place. They're just
for months
threatening tariffs. And the market really hates this, because if that were to come to pass, it could I guess blossom into a trade war, and it wouldn't be just China. It would probably grow greater than that. So there's a lot of fear out there that this will happen. But
I loved what Trump said about we're not in a trade war. We've already lost that.
Right. Yeah, it's a good point.
And he was exactly right.
Yeah, and the message from the administration is very clear, too. This is just a negotiating tactic, and that's all it is. What Trump wants is to sit at the table and get the Chinese to enforce intellectual property rights of Americans and American businesses, and basically get rid of that $600 billion a year in theft. And
hey, you want technology? Fine, we'll sell it to you.
Yeah.
It'll cost you $600 billion.
Exactly.
But then you can make all of them you want, and who cares?
Of course, China doesn't want that, but this is the tactic that he's going to use, is to continue to threaten them to get his way. And will it work? I honestly don't know, but hopefully it will. It would be a big win if it did.
I will absolutely promise you one thing. It will not work if it's not tried.
That's very true. And in the long run, honestly, this would be a good thing for us. The markets are going to hate it short term, but eventually the markets will start trading on corporate earnings again, which we think are going to start in a couple weeks and be pretty good. So
very good.
Yeah. So I think that this is to me, it's a buying opportunity.
Well, reacting to this is futile, I think. And Wednesday proved that. And when we get back, I'll read that letter, but also we're going to talk about the jobs report. The jobs report was completely mishandled, as always in the mainstream media, and even the smarter people missed most of what was going on there. Was it great? No.
No,
I'll be the first one
not.
To say that. But was it awful? Heck no, it wasn't. And we'll tell you some of the reasons why we feel that way right after the break. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines remain open, 222-8255. We do have a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. This one is a market-based question. What foreign markets are the most undervalued? There are two of them, based on prices and earnings estimates. And you can win this by getting only one of them right.
Okay.
Now, they're foreign. Okay. That means everything but the U.S. So what are at least one of the two foreign markets are the most undervalued by traditional standards as we speak. Okay, you want to talk about jobs?
Yeah, definitely. There were two jobs reports released this week. The first one was really, really good. That was the ADP private payrolls report. It came out on Wednesday.
At the low point in the market.
Yep, and it looked, the estimate was for 210,000, but actually came in at 241,000. So it was a pretty good beat, very strong number. However, the non-farm payrolls, the government report came out on Friday, and it was pretty disappointing. It was supposed to, well, the experts thought it would come in at 185, but it came in at 103 instead. And it did not help things on Friday, I'll put it that way. The mood was already kind of dark on Wall Street, and then that was kind of it added to the worries. But
which, if you think about it, might just diffuse some of the pressure on the Fed anyway. So.
Yeah, true. And then Powell did speak on Friday as well. And I think he didn't really say much. I watched the speech. But
he's learning.
Exactly. He's already a Fed. He's already an expert.
They said on his first speech, the report was that he's got a lot of learning to do because I understood a couple sentences. Yeah.
In general, though, he painted a pretty bright picture of the U.S. economy. He quoted a lot of things that we talk about, the unemployment rate, the jobs numbers, all those things. But he didn't say that the economy is overheated or anything like that. So I think that we're still looking at three interest rate hikes this year, one of which has already happened. That's my guess. I'd be pretty surprised to see anything different this year.
Oh, me too. Anything more. I would be less surprised to have less than I would be to have more.
Knowing the Fed, I would agree with that. But I do think that I think we're looking at three.
All right. And on Friday, when the BLS comes out with its numbers, they also came out with a household survey, and that was actually negative at minus 37,000. Plus, there were 50,000 taken away from the prior 2 months. So why were these numbers so low when things are so good? Well, I took a look at the unseasonally adjusted numbers, and this the fine art of statistics means that you have to adjust things to be kind of similar to what they were before in the past, even if things are a little different than they were. And quite frankly, it's very educated guessing. So I just thought I'd take a look at what it was. Actual new jobs counted from the survey were 665,000. That was adjusted down to 103 for seasonal adjustment. The prior month, the actual was 1,232,000, and it was adjusted down to 785. So the labor force shrunk. Because retirements, and I was talking to Adam at the break, it's estimated now that between 10 and 12,000 people a day are turning 65, and that is leading to an awful lot of retirements. And that has happened. The labor force did not grow very much last month. The big growth months are going to be this month and next month, as every college graduate in the country is going to come out and start looking for work.
And probably find it, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's a great,
well for finding it.
Probably too. A great year to graduate. So
college graduates in 2018 can just thank their lucky stars, mm-hmm. I say. So what happened net there was we took 1,897,000 jobs in 2 months, actual jobs, and we adjusted them down to 748,000, which still left a six-month running total over 200,000. Well, that's pretty good. No, I was the first one to say, even before we started talking about this, that it was not a great report, and it's not. But it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's nothing to be concerned about, in my opinion. The unemployment rate also was supposed to tick down to 4%, but it stayed at 4.1. That number is, I don't know, I don't want to say it's meaningless, but it is not
it's
as important.
It's less meaningful than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, people place a lot of importance on it. It is a good indicator of where you're at, but the 0.1%, I wouldn't even think about it.
Now remember, this tariff talk is about what could happen several months down the line. The backup number that'll tell you how badly it's needed, our trade deficit widened to a 9-year high of $56.5 billion, which means $56.5 billion left America for other countries more than what came in. Now, back in the old days when we measured GNP rather than GDP, gross national product, versus gross domestic product. The only difference is that GNP takes the net of your imports and exports. Well, it made our GNP higher because we were a net exporter. We are now a huge net importer, so they don't talk about it anymore. That's typical government cover-up stuff. Also, very quietly, inflation is sneaking up and wages are sneaking up. And that is, believe it or not, some of the best news I could be giving you here on a Saturday morning. CPI is now running the fastest in a decade, and people are starting to make more money. And this group of people, as we said, coming out of college, they're going to be real happy.
And one area that we saw that in this month was the rebound in auto sales, which have been very, very soft and really needed a good bump, and they got it this month. And I think that's a direct result of the payroll tax withholdings going down.
Taxes, people have more money. Bonuses, and now new people coming in and getting jobs. I think you're going to see a great summer for the car salesmen out there. All right. On Wednesday morning at 8:38, we penned this little letter to the people. By then, the futures were down about 600 points, and market opened up like that. So we sent this out real early in the day, and it's kind of interesting looking back on it. To our valued clients and friends, market volatility isn't much fun, but we suppose that goes without saying. Although the past few weeks have been volatile and have ranged from scary to exhilarating days, the net result has been pretty much sideways. This is actually fairly typical market action, but appears and feels unusually large due primarily to the pure size of the numbers involved. We don't tend to focus on percentage moves, paying attention instead to point changes. While this isn't necessarily comforting, it is realistic. On the Van Wee Financial Hour this past Saturday, we discussed the largest point change in the history of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. On Monday, March 26th, we saw the third largest point gain in history, with the Dow rising 669 points, which was an increase of 2.84% in a single day. Nice, huh? We also discussed the two largest point gains in history, both of which occurred in October of 2008, ironically, in the heat of the Great Recession and market crash. Those gains were 936 and 889 points, but they represented increases of 11.08 and 10.88%. Big impact. In fact, there have been many one-day gains with a greater percentage change than last Monday's change, which we knew. I'm going to interrupt this because I'm going to follow my own rules, and we have on the phone Cheryl. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to guess at the trivia question, but before I do, I respect both of your professional opinions, and I'd like to know what your feelings are on a possible trade war with China, if you think it would be good ultimately or bad.
We'll win it if we have one. I don't think we'll have one.
I think it would be...
You don't think we will?
Nope.
I don't think we will either, but I actually disagree. I think it would be bad for us.
It would be bad for us.
Yeah.
The agreement here is in the very low percentage chance that it will happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trump knows what he's doing. He's a negotiator. That's why we hired him.
Okay.
Real simple.
Could I guess at the trivia question?
Absolutely.
I'll take a guess, and one of the economies being Japan?
It's a very good guess, but it's not correct.
Okay. Alrighty.
That is an excellent guess.
I might have guessed that myself. Because Japan's actually doing quite well, but it's not as undervalued as a couple of the others. But I really appreciate that call and your guess. It was wonderful. It's a thinker.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. All right. The letter continues. Most of us also remember the 2 days in February 2018 when the Dow realized the largest point losses in history. These losses were 1,175 points and 1,033 points and represented losses of 4.6 and 4.1% respectively. Similarly, there have been many times in market history when the Dow lost a larger percentage in a single day than those days. It shows you the law of large numbers. All those numbers may or may not make us feel any better, but let's look at what's really going on out there. Some observations. 2017 was an unbelievable market stretch where we incurred record low volatility and it felt good while being unrealistic the whole time. Volatility started when Trump moved from taxes to trade, another in the series of platform stances upon which he was elected. Americans are fearful of the very mention of tariffs due mostly to our textbook-based recollections of the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1930, which was an abject disaster by most counts. American jobs have steadily been getting lost to one-sided trade agreements over the decades. Our intellectual property rights are practically non-existent in Asia as they're being stolen with no repercussions. Our economy has been stagnant for years, but is now charging ahead in a strong recovery. No one is suggesting a broad-based Smoot-Hawley-type tariff, threatening instead targeted negotiated positions. Threatened negotiations by China are doing three things: saving face for them, opening a comment period for the subject of trade and tariff talks, and scaring the devil out of many Wall Street traders. Rather than discuss the negatives, we'd prefer to dwell on what is happening right here at home. The U.S. economy is experiencing record low unemployment, rapidly accelerating GDP growth, etc. I will finish up the very little bit that's left right after the break. Don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have on the line Larry. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. How are you? Beautiful day.
I'm doing great. Can I make a quick guess? And I won't burn time.
Of course you can.
China?
No. Another good guess, and they're humming right along, but they're not as undervalued as a couple of the others. I love the guess, and as always, I do have a point, so stay tuned.
Steve and Adam, live Van Wee Financial on world tour.
You got it today. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, just a quick finish up here. What's going on today on the positive part? We're having record low unemployment, record high GDP growth, job creation at levels not seen in a long time, absolute high records in confidence among consumers and small businesses. And those are the things that move the markets. Minutes ago, remember this was written at 8:38 Wednesday morning, the ADP private sector jobs report for March was released. It showed an increase of 241,000 new jobs, continuing five consecutive months at or above 200,000. On Friday, the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, will release the establishment and household surveys of March job creation, and we expect there'll be similar and upside surprise potential. Oops, chalk up one bad one for me.
Yep.
Things are good, as we like to say. In a few more days, the new earnings season will begin, with profit increases expected to be over 16% up year over year, reflecting both the great economic conditions and recent tax cuts. Our advice is to let Trump be Trump and have some fun watching the posture on all sides of the issues. Meanwhile, expect volatility to continue, but keep your eyes on the prize, so to speak, and do not pay undue attention to the media whiners. Economics will trump personalities, and yes, that pun was intended.
Yeah, if you'd like to receive those emails, we don't send out a ton of them. We try and send it out about quarterly or whenever the market conditions dictate that we do something. But if you'd like to receive them, just go to our website, vanweefinancial.com, and there is a submission form on there. It'll put you on the mailing list, and you'll receive them. I promise we won't clutter your inbox with anything but that type of commentary once in a while.
All right, let's lighten up a minute because I've been kind of serious lately. Saving money going to Disney?
Yeah.
Is it possible?
Well, well,
depends if you want to spend a lot or a lot more.
Right.
Or a little more than a lot more.
Yeah, it's pretty staggering what it costs to go to Disney for a few days these days. And so if you're already planning a trip, there are ways to save money on it. The cost for a family of four for four nights is as follows. A hotel is $1,746. That's on site. Admission is $1,660 just to go to the parks. Food is another $1,154. And souvenirs and extras will run you about $400. So the total, $4,960 or $310 per person per day.
Savings to be continued.
Okay.
Rule number one takes over. Good morning, Al.
Yes. I want to take a shot at your trivia.
Absolutely.
Would it be the Eastern Europe block?
No. But no. You're getting warmer. I appreciate the guess.
Okay, the Russian then.
No, one guess per customer.
Oh, okay.
All right. Put you on the right track. I appreciate it. You've just made it a lot easier for everybody else.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Yeah, of course.
What do you think about the Guggenheim bullet shares?
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with those. They're the they're a way you can do a bond ladder without buying individual bonds, if I'm not mistaken. So they have a targeted date of maturity. I think they're a decent product, although to own those, you pay an administrative fee that comes out of their return. So in my opinion, if you have a decent amount of money to invest, it might be better just to buy the bonds and pay the one-time trade fee on them to accomplish the same thing. But they're a good product, and they're very liquid, so you can sell them at any time, whereas bonds, you can sell bonds at any time as well, but the fact that you're holding a bunch of them in one ETF makes them a little more stable in value versus an individual bond, which carries company risk with it.
Right.
And okay. Either later today or next week, we're going to talk about one of the alternatives to that, which I'll just let you guess about. But I have a better way. And you'll hear it soon. We appreciate your call. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Now, can you save us a little of that $4,000?
You can. There are ways to do
it. I'm going to save all four. Yeah, I'm not going.
Well, that is the best way to save money on a Disney trip is to not go to Disney. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's an option for a lot of people with kids. It's an annual trek down to Orlando. So the ways that you can save money, one, you can visit on what's called a value day. If you Google Disney crowd calendar, there's a bunch of sites that do this, and they will show you the non-peak days and times of year to go, and you can save approximately 15% on tickets if you do it that way.
Well,
that's a significant savings. If you get tickets in advance and you do not purchase them directly from Disney, you can get better deals. So places like AAA, Costco, Park Savers, Undercover Tourist, they all offer discounted Disney tickets, and they're actually a better deal than buying from the park themselves, which is strange. You would think
counterintuitive.
Yeah, but that's how they do it. If you go for a whole week, you will actually spend more money, but the discounts are greater. So the cost per person per day will come down. And yes, you know, if you take that 8-day trip, it would be about $10,000, but you can probably, I'm guessing, save about $2,000. So your cost per day per person is lower.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do the park hopper. This is a thing where they offer you a ticket that's good at multiple parks on a certain day, mm-hmm. but it costs you more money. And you might think it's a better deal because if you bought each individual pass, it would be more. But if you do that every day, then you're actually ending up paying more for the tickets.
You're compounding.
If you book an offsite hotel, you can actually save a ton of money. Orlando has so many hotel rooms, and if there's not a big convention in town, staying off of Disney property can be actually really cheap.
And I would imagine shuttle services are all the time to everywhere.
Absolutely. But some people actually say that Disney hotels are a better bang for your buck because you have parking fees if you go, but you have to weigh all that out in the costs. So you can consider camping. Disney has Fort Wilderness, and it's kind of like there's enough to do at Fort Wilderness, apparently, that you can skip a day of going to the parks and just stay there. So that's a good way to save money. If you pack meals, you can actually bring some food into the park as long as it follows the guidelines, and then rent a locker near the front and keep sandwich supplies there and make your own lunch. And that is a big savings because eating at Disney is almost as much as buying tickets to Disney.
That's scary.
Another great idea, Amazon Prime. If you can have pantry items delivered to your hotel room the day you arrive, and so therefore you will get you don't even have to go to the grocery store. The food arrives at your place the day you get there, and you have food for the week.
Now you're making sense.
Definitely. Another idea, buy your Disney-branded items before your visit. In Orlando, they charge a huge premium because everybody wants them. But if you buy them off of Amazon before you go and give them to your kids when you get there, it's a big savings.
Huh.
Giving
you figures, doesn't it? Amazon work their way into this one?
Exactly. Give your kids a budget. You can allow for some souvenirs, but say, you know, put a limit on it, $25 or something like that. That'll knock down that $400 in souvenirs and extras number quite a bit. You can dine out for less. You can. There's tons of restaurant options in Orlando. If you're willing to venture off property, you can definitely find better deals. And then there's apps for Disney World that show wait times, rides, show times, all of that. So you can. It actually, that's not a huge savings, but what that will do is maximize your time at the park.
Efficient use of time. Yep.
Right.
A big deal there.
Lastly, just planning your trip. The more thought you put into it beforehand, the less it's going to cost you, I guarantee you. So spend some time planning your trip. It's an outlay of $5,000. It's probably worth 4 hours or so to plan it out and make sure you try and minimize that cost.
Cool.
Yeah.
It can be done. It can be helped. But it can be done.
But the bottom line is you're still going to spend a lot of money.
Yeah. All right. Stupid headline of the week time. Billionaire sells entire stock portfolio. Warning, there's a major crash coming. Stocks plunge. Stocks plummet in sell-off. One look at the headlines, and it's clear that stocks are in major trouble. This was an email I got with a big headline. And if what's around the corner is anything like the last crash, countless investors could be wiped out again. But as panic and fear are gripping the market more and more every day, there's one small group of VIP folks who could care less. And it's all thanks to Ted Bauman and his team's new research service called Alpha Stock Alert. And guess what? They're selling... You finish the sentence.
Mm-hmm. A newsletter.
You don't have to be wiped out, folks. Just send a few $100 to Ted and his boys, and they'll protect you from it. Got more after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the segment sponsored by Robinson Maintenance and Landscape, who have been really sprucing our place up lately. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia questions still out there. Just give me one of the two most undervalued stock exchanges outside this country. All right, I'm going to tell you the long way what's wrong with the reaction that's going on to what Trump is doing on this trade war. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I call it the 60s. Once was enough. I grew up a long time ago. It kind of scares me to think everything I've lived through, born in 1950. And things were pretty much like Leave It to Beaver on television, which was set in the mythical town of Mayfield, which was widely thought to be in Ohio. They never really said it, but it was. I was in small town Wisconsin, and it was just pretty much like that. You know, things were loose and respectable, and doors were unlocked. In fact, when my in-laws sold their house in Wisconsin, they had to go out and get a key made. They couldn't find one. It was quite a while ago, but still. And our version of Barney Fife kept his single bullet in his shirt pocket just in case. My keys, like everybody else's, if they say, where are your car keys? You say, well, they're in the ignition where they belong. And in the back of my 60 Chevy, you would have found either a set of golf clubs or a couple of hunting rifles, just depended on the season. We were fearful of things that could go wrong that would antagonize your teacher, worse yet, your principal, or heaven forbid, your parents. President Eisenhower, was a war hero. He understood the personal ownership of cars in the post-war era, which we won again, was exploding. So he recognized the need for an interstate highway system, and he got it done. Times are good. Here's some highlights from the moment of my birth, just to set the stage. 1950, the first credit card appeared, and Snoopy was born. How about that? On a darker side, the Korean conflict began, but we were all pretty sheltered from that without the 24/7 news cycle. 1951 was very exciting because in came color TV. 1952, seat belts became available in cars, but we didn't use them. They were just so darn uncomfortable to sit on. 1953, Sir Edmund Hillary summited Mount Everest, apparently causing Hillary's parents to change her name. Okay, that was snarky. I'm sorry. 1954, in Brown versus Board of Education, the Supreme Court ruled segregation illegal. Can you believe segregation became illegal in my lifetime?
Wow.
I can't. In 55, we got Disneyland. In 56, we got Elvis Presley. Parents were outraged. Kids weren't. 1957 saw us take second place in the space race because the Soviets launched Sputnik, and I used to go outside at night with my parents and watch it go over. 1958, we met a daunting challenge when Bobby Fischer became the youngest ever chess master. 1959 was the beginning of a very bad period to follow as Fidel Castro rose to power, and it got worse from there, and I will go on after this. Good morning, Robert.
Yeah, hi, how are you guys?
Excellent, how are you?
Doing well, doing well. Wanted to give that trivia question a shot. Is it Greece?
No, it is not. It's another wonderful guess and you're in the right zone, but it's not correct.
I have a feeling it's an island nation just off to the side of it then. Okay.
Well, maybe not that close. We'll see. Okay. Hang on, though. You'll get the answer before we're out of here. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right, well, hey, thanks again, guys. You take care.
You too.
All right, well, while I'm taking this little stroll down memory lane with everybody, the perhaps not so obvious reason for looking back is the Trump presidency. That may seem like a bit of a stretch, but let's go back a little further. After the Revolutionary War, we paid off the national debt. Andrew Jackson got it down to zero. Following World War II, where we had again borrowed money, the debt stood at $285 billion. And from that moment on, it was not repaid. Now, I just credited Eisenhower with spending a lot of money on the interstate system and that sort of thing. But never again from that time on did we get into a national mood to pay down the debt or pay off the debt. So we started electing some people right back then. John Dingell in 55, who replaced his father. Louise Slaughter died in office recently, and she was born in 1929. And I could go on for a long time, Robert Byrd, so on. These people get there, they never leave. They get old, they don't understand what's going on, and they have been outside the real world for so long. Back in the 90s, when Newt got through the contract with America, one of the items, the line items, was a line item veto, and it passed handily in the House because voters and even congressmen were in the mood for that right then. It would have helped a lot. It immediately got challenged and gone to the Supreme Court, and it was knocked down as unconstitutional, stating that it would reduce the voters' clear choices. Well, okay, Newt made one classic error in that. In his pocket, he did not have a constitutional amendment awaiting being put on the floor of the House and the Senate, and then out to the states. We had the national mood then for the line item veto. We have never had it since, and I think that's the problem. We need line item vetoes, but we can't get them until we do something about it. But what we really need is term limits for politicians. Can any of these people who have been in there for decades look in the mirror and say, I am so proud of what this country has become under my leadership? Wake up, America, as Eric Bolling would say. And by the way, all of you politicians with a lot of longevity out there, Johnny can't read. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, I wanted to take a guess at the trivia.
Great. What do you think?
Did anyone guess the Czech Republic?
They did not, but if they had, I would have had to tell them the same bad news I've got for you.
Oh, I was thinking that. Or
warm, but no cigar. Sorry about that. I do appreciate your call. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, with time wasting a little bit, and since we do have a point here, I'm going to give it out. The two most undervalued foreign stock markets right now are, first, Italy. Now, Adam and I have been talking about this during the breaks of the show. I don't get it. I don't get Italy, period. I do know one thing. They have a good time.
It's a great place to visit.
180, 190, 200 governments since World War II, something like that. Berlusconi might come back, the original Italian bad boy. I don't know why. I don't make this stuff up either.
No.
But the interesting part, and the one I was hoping someone would think of, was the United Kingdom. That is the other most undervalued stock market right now. What was supposed to happen, according to the experts, who are some of the people now giving the market fits about all the stuff that's going on with Trump, what was supposed to happen if they passed Brexit? Tank. What was supposed to happen if we elected Trump? Tank. What didn't happen? Tanking and the UK becoming in bad financial shape. Instead, it marches forward, and it's doing fine, and it right now is a very undervalued economy. What did you say the forward PE on it is?
I think their current PE ratio is somewhere around 12-ish.
Current.
Yeah.
And things are getting better.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. That number is from a while back, but that's what I remember reading.
Okay, so if you're looking around for a place to maybe put some money and you're looking overseas, there's a couple choices for you. But as I said, I always like to have a point in my trivia questions, and the point is they were wrong about Brexit. They were wrong about Trump. They're wrong about the potential trade war. It's not going to happen. It's not going to kill the market. And if you want to live your life like Chicken Little, who you see on all those commercials nowadays, just keep selling off every time somebody repostures on this whole trade talk thing. It is not the problem that it's looking like it is in the markets, on TV, or whatever. It has nothing to do with long-term economy in this country. It has only to do with Trump derangement syndrome.
I wanted to give a quick update on a story that we've been kind of following, thanks to a caller who wanted to know about the selling JEA situation. Well, this week, as it turns out, the JEA CEO was up for a contract renewal, and instead he resigned. So he didn't indicate it was directly due to this, but you can read between the lines and see what's happening there. So there's an interim CEO. I think it's the CFO is taking over while they look for a new CEO. And we'll be curious to see who they pick, and who they pick will ultimately determine the outcome of this. So it's going to be an interesting story here in the next 6 months to a year.
I have an opinion, and it's going to take some effort to change my opinion. My opinion is there is no utility that would be worse off in private hands than in public hands. And I say that not just for utilities. I believe it's the right thing to do, and I'm certainly open to your opinions should you come up with one and want to talk about it on any future show. All right, well, this is blown back rather quickly. I hope everybody had a good time. We will be here exactly like this next week. Don't go anywhere. Till then, this is the Van Wee Financial Hour.